But not at the health authority, just Oregon. So I was asked to come and talk about Oregon's effort to move to continuous tracking in the way we record, or we ask our clinics to record their temperatures. And I was happy to do it. This has been a lot of fun. So I'll just get started here. I'll try not to do it with notes. So how did Oregon get started with this? We, like many of you, just went by the CDC guidelines up until about 2005, and that was just the clinics had to use NIST-certified thermometers for tracking their temperatures. And from as it was told to me, I hadn't started then, but that there was a small group that wasn't feeling really confident with the data we were collecting that way, and we were kind of afraid a lot of things were slipping through the cracks. So it was decided that we wanted to move to continuous tracking. And in 2006, it was made a requirement for all public clinics to adopt continuous tracking. And shortly after, in 2007, that was moved to public or private clinics as well. And basically, today, the language is this. It's not much different except for the term continuous tracking. And I know some other states, I don't know if any of you are in the room, have done the same thing. So I know we're not the only ones. But it's been quite an interesting journey. I wanted to say a little bit, this is a guide I created when I, about a year into my position, I had one of my clinics ask me, great, you want continuous tracking, I don't know what that is. So I created this little guide mainly for this one clinic. The other health educators liked it. We started adopting it for new clinic orientations. Since then, we've had a few other states ask to use it. Any of you in this room can use it if you just want to shoot us an email and ask, or just use parts of it. Our providers really love it. It's a great resource to give them kind of somewhere to start. So I thought I would talk a little bit quickly about the different kind of thermometers. You all probably know what's out there, but just to give you an overview. A lot of our clinics will use this sort of basic style as a backup thermometer. There's several different kinds out there. This is just one of them. I think this is probably very familiar to a lot of you. I know a lot of states actually have purchased these. Some manufacturers have given the style out to vaccine clinics, our clinics. They're great because they capture min-max, but they don't tell you when it happened. Some of them might date stamp, but they don't necessarily tell you how long they were out of range, and that's kind of the big thing, is to know how long it's been out. This is the style that we bought all of our public clinics in 06, and then we had some extra money to, this came out of a CDC special project fund, is what I was told, to be able to buy some of these for our clinics. And they were great at the time. The problems we've had since then, a lot of clinics don't understand that different paper goes with different units, so they're using the wrong paper. Sometimes the digital readout, I guess we have a screen over here too, the digital readout won't always match up with the paper. We've had some struggles with this unit. And because of that, and because clinics have asked, you know, what else could we use, I went out and did a little research, and I found this unit. This is not the only one they can use. There's plenty out there. This is one that a lot of clinics are using. It's small. It's about the size of this. It's got a readout so they can take their twice-a-days, which we still require, off the front of it. And then it has a USB port so that it can be downloaded. We recommend weekly downloads so they can look back over the week and see if anything has happened that they should be worried about. And then it seems like the bigger organizations, we have several large ones, Kaiser being one of them, have moved to a wireless system that allows them to monitor multiple units from one location. And these allow you to set up alarms. It allows you to check temperatures from home or from pretty much anywhere. So I really think this is where, you know, best practice is going when it becomes more affordable. These can be pretty expensive, depending on how many you get. Just as a side note, what our move to continuous has helped small clinics do is make the case to their doctors or their administrators that maybe it's time to upgrade their units. where twice-a-day logs weren't very convincing to a lot of administrators. If they show up and say, you know, we have a home style that we bought at Lowe's, this is a real graph. You know, they obviously all don't look like that. A lot of them stay in range just fine. But when you compare it to lab equipment, it can be quite different. And so this has helped build a case for a lot of clinics to kind of upgrade their units. This is an interesting graph just because I took a real graph from one of my clinics that obviously had an excursion, and I transposed a twice-a-day temperature reading over that. And so I just scrolled across and marked it at 8:50 in the morning and 4:30 in the evening, when a lot of our clinics would take their twice-a-days. And the point is obvious that their twice-a-day logs would have looked just fine. So they could have been had a whole week of excursions and not know it. So that leads me to this quote. But it's not enough just to use continuous tracking. It's also important that they understand how their equipment works. This is from another one of my clinics that I showed them how to set up their continuous logger. And I went back about 6 months later, and this is what they printed me. And I asked why they weren't downloading it weekly, and they said they didn't know how, and or they forgot. And you can see they had a pretty major excursion there in late early January. So this is frustrating. This is something we run into in Oregon a lot, is they adopt continuous tracking, but then they don't know how to use it. So that's still something we struggle with quite a bit. So just kind of in summary, some of the challenges we faced in Oregon. Medical staff have had a hard time kind of learning how to use this equipment correctly. Providers have a struggle helping their staff understand how to use the equipment. And then there's a heightened stress or anxiety around being able to see what your temperatures are doing all the time that you don't have with twice a day. Because even those little small blips when you open the fridge show up on their graphs. And folks who are new to clinic, new to this kind of equipment, kind of get really upset and start calling us all the time about it. And for our staff, the struggle's been around also understanding the equipment, how to read it, how to set it up, because we're usually the first people they call when they're having problems. And also it has created more work to understand and help them through all these issues that maybe wouldn't have come up if they'd just been doing twice a day. Benefits, I personally think the benefits definitely outweigh the problems. We feel like it's reduced loss in several ways. One is that the excursions are more visible and you know about them quicker. It also reduces, if you're able to pinpoint a smaller excursion, it reduces the amount of folks you need to recall. So it helps in that way. It's also considered a best practice. I got this quote. I wasn't there, but at Vaccine University, and I think she's presenting next in the next session. Michael talks about how continuous tracking is critical to effective storage and handling. And as I said before, it's interesting. This being able to have these graphs help clinic staff make the case for upgrading their equipment, which we didn't even realize, but it's really helped. And then finally, vaccine viability. The ultimate goal is it helps us make sure Oregon kids are getting protective and potent vaccines. So this is just an article that ran in the Onion. I just thought it was kind of funny and a good way to end this. But even if they don't want vaccines, we're going to keep giving them. So that's it. Thank you, Paul.
$10.
I made a typo.
Oh, that's okay. It's much bigger. It's more impressive to see how much that counseling providers who have been faced with revaccination is, beware of threatening them with all of the bad things that will happen if they face revaccination, because what I find is that that can make it even more difficult to convince them to go forward with it. And what we don't want to have happen is providers to adopt a don't ask, don't tell policy, which is, I can't afford to be humiliated in front of my patients. I don't really believe there's much of a problem, so I'm not going to tell them because I know what they're going to tell me to do, and I don't think that we should. And it's very easy for a provider just not to tell you what a problem is. So that sort of threatening tone, we definitely review all of the issues of, you know, how to handle media. They could find out, okay, we usually, when we identify a problem that requires revaccination, despite their best efforts, because sometimes that happens, we then coach them through the problems they will face so that they feel, okay, I can do this, as opposed to I'm overwhelmed, I can't even deal with it, because that panic is a real issue that we face when we work with providers who are revaccinating. And it's just a tone issue. It's not actually the content.
A really good point, and I'm sorry if I sounded like I was threatening. I certainly didn't mean to. What I try to do is go out there and tell them that I'm their friend, and so that's why I was trying to point out that the showing them how much is in their refrigerator, because a lot of times they just, the medical assistant or the person who is the VFC coordinator, like the slide showed, maybe she just got the job yesterday. She doesn't realize the investment that practice has in that money. So that's why I'm going out there and actually showing them and saying, look, this is why you're going to want to take really good care of this stuff. And
right.
Please don't trust thousands of dollars worth of vaccine to literally have gone to practices where the thermometer that they put in the fridge for me to come back and check was an oral thermometer.
Right, yeah.
Or an oven thermometer.
And that certainly is helpful to getting them to understand the importance of proper storage. The problem is issues can happen that are unrecognized anyway, and when a failure or a temperature excursion does occur, we want them to come forward and work with us to make things right. What we find is we coach them through the issues. In fact, what I tell them is your patients will appreciate your coming forward and explaining the problem and offering to make it right. So instead of losing credibility, you actually gain credibility by addressing the problem with them as opposed to covering it up, which is what your patient will expect you to do. The other thing is that the media, we participate with them if they have media questions, and we haven't had any media issues in a while. But when they do, we tell them, you know, we can routinely explain they're doing the right thing, this has happened, and work them through the media process so that they don't feel terrified. Because it's a really, I've had physicians in tears on the phone with me because they missed a problem for 2 days and had 13 kids they had to call back. And so getting that sobbing pediatrician through the process of not thinking that her credibility had been destroyed by this experience was really important. So just
I totally agree with you, and that's why I think that sometimes when I point out to them the price of the
And I have no
then,
argument
then they,
on the price of the vaccine at all. That's that too.
I'm trying to prevent these things from happening.
And we're all for that. And then the last thing, just on the comment on the continuous tracking, right now VFC doesn't currently approve any of the continuous tracking devices for use as a VFC monitoring device. So how does that work in Oregon?
Well, as I was told by my manager.
And Patricia can certainly jump in here on that, because we've been lobbying for VFC to approve the use of electronic data loggers for tracking vaccine temperatures continuously, and it has not been approved yet for use as a VFC monitoring device, correct?
That's
this is something
correct.
We're working on. That's correct. So, continuous tracking is something we want. We want VFC to approve it, so I'm glad you're out there doing it ahead of the curve and showing us. Although on your slide I would note that the provider that you showed who had the big excursion in January actually lost all their vaccine at the beginning because they had temperature shown below 32 on day one. And any temperature below 32, no matter how long it was there, ruins all your liquid vaccine, period. So one of the big problems that continuous monitoring brings up is that continuous monitoring gives us more information than our guidelines are prepared to deal with. Because the guidelines were written for when you casually check temperatures, and now that we can continuously monitor it, the guidelines are going to result in throwing away hundreds of millions of dollars worth of vaccine, and unless we can get better guidelines. So that's the other thing that we're advocating for, are better guidelines for temperatures. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, before, just to answer that
first question. Before this went into our agreement, we did get CDC approval to add it to our agreement as far as continuous tracking. That's what was told to me.
Yes. What? Because it's not currently what VFC policy says is acceptable. And we are still maintaining that temperatures need to be manually reviewed and recorded twice a day, for you already know the reasons why. We are interested, however, in looking at this other equipment and how this other equipment works. Currently, though, there's no standards for this equipment. So one of the work groups, Kelly does sit on a subgroup that we're working on at the CDC, and there's another subgroup that's looking into equipment. And one of the goals of that subgroup is to try to come up with some standards so that we can, you know, begin to really scientifically address the, you know, these other equipment questions. The other thing about continuous tracking thermometers that we do say is a good use for them, along with manually looking at and recording those temperatures twice a day, if you have a device that's continuously monitoring and you're not there on the weekends and you're not there at night, you have some way to begin to measure the time, as Albert said, that the vaccine may have been out of its correct storage temperatures. So we don't say you can't use them. We just say we don't have standards to say this is, you know, this is the standard for monitoring. Thanks, Kelly.
Hi, I'm Christoph Diazio. I'm a general pediatrician from Southern Pines, North Carolina, and have been interested in cold chain issues for a while now. We actually got a continuous monitor 2-3 years ago, and since then have spent about $30,000 on lab-grade refrigerators and freezers for our $180,000 of private vaccine and about $180,000 of Medicaid vaccine that we have in our 11 FTE practice, and we feel that's a very good use of money. My comment is that the problem I have with those data loggers is, so what, I found out that I froze all my vaccine at 2 a.m. That didn't really help me. How much do those devices cost? Because the device I have that will call me and call me and call me until a human being enters an acknowledgement code that uses NIST certified pros is like $800. Mm-hmm. So how much are these little key loggers and these paper devices? Because it's probably close to the same price.
Now, the little one I showed that a lot of our providers, I agree with you. I think the ones that a lot of our providers are using is sort of a bridge. I think they should really go to something like the one you're talking about that'll alarm you ahead of
right.
time. This one doesn't do that, but that particular unit, I think, $85.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so it's orders of magnitude cheaper. And then I guess the second comment I had is that when I talk to other pediatricians about how we've spent all this money in lab grade fridges, they all say I'm a crazy person, and that where is the data to show that in the household fridges that it would help move the case along with them, essentially, if you have data where you can show those revaccination efforts and those costs. So getting some of that literature out to where the practicing pediatricians can see it will move things along. The other comment I'll tell you as a practice management nerd, you know, if you go to New York or New Jersey or other parts of the country where they get $2 per administration fee, to come to them and say, I want you to spend $5,000 on a fridge and $4,000 on a freezer, becomes a tough sell in a hurry. So, you know, there are a lot of tensions around vaccines, and we are not recognized for the worth we bring to the healthcare system. You know, when we'll flog someone in the ICU with $150,000 for a week when they're going to die anyways, but we don't want to spend money on the best thing in healthcare. So as this push that's inevitable happens towards laboratory-grade fridges, is CDC having commentary about having to take some of that pain away from the practices? They're going to have to go out and spend $10,000 or $20,000 on more reliable storage units.
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
Go ahead.
It's a little bit of the cow out of the barn, or is it the horse out of the barn?
Horse, generally.
either one.
But keep going, and we'll find out what your meaning is.
You can choose your animal.
In Oregon, it's a little after the fact, but if a clinic has a huge loss due to a freezing vaccine, One thing we do as a first-time only option is they can apply some or all of that loss to new equipment, so they can go buy a lab-grade fridge for that. I know it's sort of like bittersweet because we've already lost all that money, but instead of paying the state for that, they can upgrade their own. So that's something we've done to try to help tackle that.
Right, and the CDC is not ignoring what you are saying by any means. We are working on trying to, I don't know, wow, mood lighting.
Someone leaned against the
switch. I thought maybe that was the hand of God coming down. We are really working at looking, and we know that you need scientific, this needs to be science-driven, and we do understand that. Just to say that you know, anecdotally, these things need to be working better is not sufficient. The other thing is, it's not just the equipment. It is, as Albert pointed out, the training that needs to be, and assuring that all the systems are in place. There's plenty of instances, reports that we've received, where providers have had large amounts of vaccine, really good equipment, and it just so happened, and they had alarms, it just so happened that the gentleman who was the security guard, who was supposed to alert everybody when the alarm came through, was new, or was the only guy that made it in the snowstorm. So it's not just the equipment, it's also the plans that we feel it's important to give guidance on. Thank you.
I actually have a comment on that because I'm a local health coordinator myself, and one of the things we have been trying to do is acknowledge the expense to our providers as we encourage them to start upgrading to commercial grade. And what I would like to ask the CDC to do, we've tried to do it a little bit locally, is to bring some billing and coding specialists, because I think our providers in our county underutilize administration reimbursement and knowing how to negotiate for those reimbursement fees and so forth. We also had one pediatrician who was able to purchase his equipment simply by offering private purchase vaccine to, say, the father for the Tdap vaccines, and that was a cash-only basis, $35 a dose or whatever he charged, and soon enough he had enough money to cover those expenses. So being a little creative, I think, goes a long way. I was going to ask you, Albert, I'm from Washington State, about what you're requiring your providers to turn in. You require the continuous monitoring. Are you requiring them to turn in the continuous monitoring forms? You know, we do have more and more. We have large healthcare systems that are thankfully looking at some of these issues finally and wanting to move in that direction, but they'd like to switch completely over to turning in, as you can imagine, 5, 6, 7 different types of forms, and our tiny little staff cannot process all that. We need standardization.
What do we turn in? Well, 2009 was a bad year for us. We had a lot of loss and a lot of excursions. And so something else we just instituted along with, this is at the beginning of this year, or maybe late last year, we require them to turn in their continuous temperature logs plus their twice-a-day logs every 3 months. And it's been great. I mean, it's cut way down on those 1- and 2-year excursions that you find when you don't look at their logs. And it gets the clinics really looking at what's going on in their fridges. They're a lot more cognizant of what their temps are doing. But it's created a lot more work for us, too. Because whenever there's anything out of the ordinary, it goes to the health educator to then follow up. So it's good, and it's good.